Okay, colleagues, good morning. And apologies for that slight delay. We'll have copies of the statements for you in a few minutes. Cape Town, I take it you're able to hear us?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay. The statement has also been emailed to you, so you can have access to the copies. Firstly, let me welcome you to the Governance and Administration Cluster Media Briefing, which will be more based on the decisions of the Lekgotla. I know some of you have been giving us a call to try to clarify some of the things that the President has spoken about. So we are now in the process to unpack more and give you more detail so that you can be able to report more on it. I have with me the Minister of Public Service and Administration, Minister Fraser Mlangeti, who is the Chair of the Governance and Administration Cluster. Our company here is the DG of PPSA, DG Levin, who is sitting on the left of the Minister. And from my right is the DG of DPLG, DG Msinganandlela. And then the sitting on the right is the DG of Palama, I'm told to say the right words. And this is formerly known as SAMDI. Please don't ask me the technical explanation of it. I'm sure you can ask them if they can explain. I just discovered myself now that it has changed. So, Minister, over to you, and then we'll distribute the statement.
Thank you very much, and good morning, everyone. I'll be going through an update on the work that's been done, what's come out of Cabinet, and bear in mind that this is one of the many briefings, and we've recently had a cluster briefing. So in certain of the areas, you are not going to see change, but rather an assertion of work that we are involved in. The first issue that I do want to raise is the fact that the Governance and Administration Cluster is responsible for creating an enabling environment for sound governance and efficient and economic as well as effective service delivery as required by the Constitution. Chapter 10 of the Constitution captures that. The cluster implements the program of action and reports on it bi-monthly. So we have quite regular reports, and that goes on the government website as well. It also completes various projects on which it reports in terms of the January and the July Mahotla. In the recent Mahotla, the cluster focused on the capacity and organization of the state, and we looked at progress made in the implementation of the APEX projects, for which we are responsible, amongst others. Now, Project 15, to just remind you, is about the filling of senior posts and signing of performance agreements. Project 16 looks at harmonization of planning across the three spheres of government. Project 17 looks at the improvement of home affairs civic services. And then there are two additional areas, and the fourth area is measures taken to improve the performance of the public service. And then, of course, the provincial and local government policy review. On APEX Project 15, and this is part of our business unusual thrust, we are looking at ensuring that currently vacant positions, and that's at the level of directors general, HODs, deputy directors general, CFOs, and municipal managers, that these are filled within a six-month period. We should also ensure that we meet the demographic targets, and all SMS members and Section 57 ensure that all SMS members and Section 57 managers have submitted signed performance agreements. By the 4th of August, that is yesterday, 84% had responded to the request of information. 34 out of 37 national departments provided their information, while 89 out of 109 provincial departments have provided information. Now, I do want to say that this was a matter that was much discussed at the recent Lekgotla. It's singular, so it's right, no? At the recent Lekgotla, And in terms of that, it was very clear that we need to ensure that compliance is effected. And we saw this as part of basic administration. 34 national departments reported a total of 2,977 senior managers. This is the number of senior managers, of which 1,985 had signed performance agreements, which is 67% of that total. Of the 89 provincial departments reported, reported a total of 3,570 senior managers, and of these, 55% have signed their performance agreement, which is 1,937. Three positions of directors general are vacant, two at the national level, which is Department of Labour and the Independent Complaints Directorate, and one at the provincial level, which is the Northern Cape province. Out of the 37 national department, 9 posts of CFOs are vacant, while 12 posts of CFOs are vacant in 89 provincial departments. Now, if you look at the Public Finance Management Act, it's very clear that in order to ensure compliance, we need to ensure that we fill those vacant positions. For APEX Project 15, which is the filling of senior posts and the signing of performance agreements, out of a total of 351 posts of Deputy Directors General, 212 at the national level and 139 at the provincial level, of which 39 posts are vacant at the national level and 24% are vacant at the provincial level. So the total vacancy rate is at around 18% at this point in time. The vacancy rate for municipal managers increased from 12% for the period ending March 2008 to 14.1% at the end of June 2008. Now, these vacancies can be ascribed to natural attrition and the expiry of fixed-term contracts. The compliance rate with the finalization of performance agreements has decreased from 183 to 174 for the period ending June 2008. The reason we look at these numbers is so that we can have a quantitative overview of what the vacancy rates are. Of course, I mean, if we do qualitative research, there's some other things that would come up, but that's what we were looking at in terms of that. It's also not merely ticking boxes, but ensuring that the instruments we've put in place to look at contributing to better functioning of government, we're looking at what the compliance is against those instruments. Around the harmonization of planning across the three spheres of government, you are aware that we are doing research to identify various elements for long-term strategic planning, and we will have a discussion document on the table for circulation in 2009. So in essence, that's work in progress. In terms of the harmonization project, which flows from our recognition that coordination across government remains a challenge, we're looking at a more structured and systematic approach to facilitate coordinated and integrated planning and action across the spheres of government. We're also enrolling the support of district and metropolitan municipalities and provinces in a collaborative effort, and this is being implemented in phases. Implementation is underway in 10 districts in terms of the rollout, district municipalities, and the implementation has commenced in 15 district municipalities. So in 10, it's underway, and the commencement has taken place in 15. The National Project Mobilization Meeting was held in July, and it was well received by local government stakeholders. And this is about, again, the implementation across district municipalities. In terms of APEX Project 17, and that's the improvement of Home Affairs Civic Services, We acknowledge the number of achievements, much as we are aware that they are still challenges. And in terms of the ID turnaround time, the issuing of IDs, I think here we'd say that this is clearly a success and one of the achievements, because the turnaround time currently stands at an average of 68 days. And this is down from an initial baseline of 163 days. And the February 2008 average was at 103 days. ID distribution has been harmonized, and a single service provider now collects documentation from Home Affairs offices and delivers these to a central ID processing center, back to local offices, and this is what's also reduced the whole issue that was taken up by the 3 days in postage time. The department is also engaging with the South African Post Office to improve distribution to the citizens. And the ID documents has been a source of identification to all South African citizens above the age of 16 years since 1986. And I think we're all aware that there is currently a mobilization campaign to once again popularize the need for young people to get their identity documents. There's been the procurement of a new blank passport manufacturing machine, as the current system has become outdated, and site preparations for the implementation of the new system is underway. The timeline for this project for the production of passports is by the end of February 2008, and this is the use of this blank passport manufacturing machine. From 2006, existing fingerprint records of citizens were converted on AFIS, the Automated Fingerprint Identification System, and that project has also been successfully completed. And over 30 million fingerprint records are stored on the AFIS database, and there is a remote verification of citizens' fingerprints that is kept on the space. In terms of the online fingerprint verification itself, these are implemented at 93 Home Affairs offices. They've trained 236 staff. On the ID track and trace technology, that's been implemented at 260 Home Affairs offices, another success. Now it's possible to check the status of an application through the ID issuance process. And SMS and internet query is available to assist with inquiries. In terms of management information statistics, these are also available, and they assist the department in identifying the blockages in the ID issuing process. The customer contact center has expanded to 102 contact center agents, and there are 22 case resolution officers that now deal with approximately 80,000 calls per month. 80% of the calls are answered within 20 seconds. So Home Affairs being the huge challenge it is, and we all know it's a major systems and infrastructure challenge. On the civic services side, we've seen palpable improvements there. In terms of measures taken to improve performance of the public service, we presented two reports at the Mahotla, January and June, and at the January one, the January Lahutla, we assessed the progress and challenges and proposed projects aimed at improving performance of the public service. Findings of the projects were presented in July, and it dealt with the basics of administration, because we know that if we want to talk improvement of public administration, it's essentially about getting the basics right. Do you have the kind of electronic filing systems you require? Do we do the basics in terms of ensuring that we meet what we've benchmarked in service delivery and so on? We're also secondly looking at strengthening management, and that's quite a key area, because as we have the various tools we've put in place, if you have a weak management cadre, you can't see the required improved productivity that should be seen in the public service. And then, of course, it's also engaging employees, ensuring their involvement, because compassion is not just about a good feeling. It's actually ensuring that the managers are in place, they're doing what's required, that we have the systems in place in order to effect the kind of assessments required and so on. Now, departments are responsible for management of their staff, and it's essential that if nothing else, they at least comply with basic minimum requirements determined in the regulatory framework. What we'd like to see ideally is that people go well beyond that. And that's why we have this thing called merit awards and performance bonuses. Performance bonuses aren't given to people for doing their job. It's actually ensuring that we incentivize those who do well. And the problem is there's been a bit of a sliding into awarding bonuses even if people are not, they are not due to them. And then, of course, signing of performance agreements by senior managers. Much as we know that signing a performance agreement doesn't guarantee and measure an individual's performance, but we need to ensure that we use these instruments in order to do the kinds of performance assessments required, and we will do it. Further to effective administration, it's also ensuring that we fill the vacancies, that we do so swiftly, and obviously that means efficiently. Only 30% of the posts vacant on the 1st of July 2007 had been filled by 31 January 2008. We still have poor quality of human resource information on the Purcell payroll, and this is also distorting the finding. And Cabinet Lekgotla approved that the clusters implement a strategy to improve the quality of the human resource information. Of the vacancy rates, Purcell shows that 13% of funded posts were vacant, while some departments reported a 14% vacancy rate. 70% of these vacancies were at levels of 1 to 8, which is below the management level, and 3% of vacancies are at senior management service level. In practice, vacancies in professional and management category impact more severely on the performance of the public service. You're all aware that departments have to consult with the Minister for Public Service for advice when restructuring their departments, and compliance levels are very good. We've seen 94% of departments submitting organizational structures to the Minister for Public Service and Administration, moi. But the quality of organizational structures are not in all instances good. Studies have shown that departments followed advice in 81% of the cases, but we've seen a noticeable improvement. Only 23% of departments responded to a request for information of skills audits, and this is a matter that we emphasized as well in the Lekgotla. 87% had conducted a skills audit since 2000. Half of them used an external service provider to this end. And this has resulted in a multiplicity of data models and data types. We also found through our study a serious shortage of human resource management capacity in departments to engage in strategic human resource planning and development and to conduct skills audits and implement performance management. Now, some of you may say, Minister, you use a hell of a lot of jargon. I heard this morning that I must use plain language, English, plain English. But I do want to say human resource planning is human resource planning. It's a management tool to ensure that we have information that will assist us as we plan. And that's why, you know, we need skills audit. We actually need to do research so that whatever findings we make, that they're actually based on information, scientific information. The Department for Public Service and Information has implemented a public service-wide skills database to allow for comparing and sharing of information, and hands-on support is being provided by the department, two departments in human resource planning. The program is aimed at strengthening human resource management capacity. Last year, we got good results in the development of service delivery improvement plans, but in this financial year, we've only received 20% of completed plans. We also have a concern around the quality of plans, and we need to ensure that we need to implement plans at the level of service delivery points, your police station, so that we know what the situation is, the reality is that confronts our policemen and women in schools, to similarly appropriately engage with educators and learners and so on, and hospitals, etc., rather than just getting these plans for the head offices. We also need a sustained hands-on support to departments and systematic enforcement of the regulations. So where there's been support, ongoing support, there's been greater compliance as well, and we want to ensure that that happens into the future. Now, in terms of a study in the management of career incidents of heads of department, and this deals with the procedures for recruitment, for deployment, and performance management, amongst others. You know, we're looking at proposed models for consideration, and I'd want to say 61% of heads of department were evaluated in the 2004-2005 financial year, 55% in 2005-2006, which is a drop, and we've only seen 14% to date for the 2006-2007 financial year. We have also emphasized, and that's come out of the Lukhutla, that we've got to take the performance evaluation forward, because we've got to hold the heads of department accountable for the performance of their departments and sectors, and we need to ensure that the linking of their performance, as I said, to the performance of the department is emphasized. We're also looking at a proposal for a framework for organizational performance management, and that's something that will come up for future as well. And then we want annual citizen and employee satisfaction surveys to be part of the assessment. This is a very important issue, because this was never factored in the past. We have also been in discussion with the Auditor General, and I've personally been, on how we will take this forward so that the annual reports from the side of the Auditor General also factors in the whole issue of performance evaluations that are required, that takes into account certain aspects of human resource management that is pertinent to them as well. Now, in terms of a study into the delegations made by the executive authorities, we've also found that executive authorities, their delegation to the administrative heads, we found that very few executive authorities made extensive delegations. We only saw extensive delegations being 10%, while 33% of the executive authorities made no or limited delegations. And their departments may be considered highly centralized. We also found that in 72% of departments, delegations did not fully cover the responsibilities required. And we found a positive relationship between the extent of delegations and the ratings of departments, their performance in the public management watch. So very clearly, where there wasn't the required delegations, there were problems in performance. Measures taken to improve performance through the public service. Here we saw the need for the employer to engage with public service unions so that we don't only meet when it's around collective bargaining. It's not the best of times to meet, as a matter of fact, clearly worst of times. And we felt that the engagement should go well beyond the conditions of service, and hence we will be having a public sector summit, and Cabinet supported the roadmap that was presented. We also, through a study of that was done within the public service, and we had done such a study post the strike, found that public servants feel they need more recognition and support for the work they do. And I think this is something to really emphasize. In order to take pride in being a public service, a servant, there's also a need to ensure that we provide public servants with the instruments to perform effectively. And there is a need for a communication campaign that will reach supervisors and public servants as well as the public to strengthen the ethos and culture of public service and make the public more conscious of the contribution that public servants make. A comprehensive report was also made on improving the work environment at public service delivery points, and here we're looking at benefiting public servants and the public. And we'd also look at the use of e-government, we look at the design of facilities, we look at issues around occupational health and safety. And to this end, we clearly need to ensure that we do work in order to deal with this. On career pathing and grade progression, we are moving away from the current 16th salary notch to one allowing for salary and grade progression for non-professionals, and we hope to complete this work quite soon as well. In terms of communication, to ensure that public servants are more aware of their conditions of service, this is currently being undertaken because we want to improve compliance within with the basic requirement of sound administration. We want to strengthen management and engage employees. The reason we want to do this is we find that many public servants actually don't understand what the conditions of service are, and we need to ensure that that is shared. Cabinet endorsed the compulsory capacity building programs for the HR professionals, and that's where Palama will play a role. As a matter of fact, in the detailed discussion, and this is being resolved upon as well, there was a view that the executive authorities and the directors general and heads of department need to be exposed to a workshop that actually equips them on the detail of complying with the requirements that they need to fulfill, both in terms of the Public Finance Management Act, looking at the public service amendment legislation and so on, because clearly there's a gap with many of the changes introduced and actually what happens in application. We've also found that in many instances managers are not even well equipped in understanding the public service code of conduct, and hence would claim that they have difficulty when having to discharge public servants who are not doing their work and so on. So it's clearly a big task for Palama. We also had an endorsement of the implementation of the Purcell cleanup strategy. I have indicated that I've already made an approach to the Auditor General to assist in monitoring compliance regarding the organizational structure and HR information. We are looking at a rapid assessment of the implementation of the service delivery improvement plans in courts, prisons, and police stations, the establishment of a formalized organizational assessment process, the introduction of citizen and employee satisfaction surveys as part of the organizational performance management, the development of a delegation model and template to assist executive authorities in determining the HR delegations to the HODs, the development of a detailed plan for a communication campaign targeting public servants and the public, and the finalization of a revised salary structure and a benchmark dispensation for non-professionals and a grade progression system for employee-based performance. On the provincial and local government policy review, the review findings were presented, and those came from submissions and research on provincial government, local government, and cooperative governance, including national government where required. This work was identified as work in progress, and there was a request for departments and provinces to make further submissions to the Department of Provincial and Local Government, and Cabinet will consider this. The process will be finalized in January of next year, when a final set of proposals will be submitted to Cabinet. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen.
Thanks very much, Minister. I realize that earlier on I did not announce the name of the DG of Palama. It's Dr. Okin from Palama, which is former SAMD. And also we are joined, Minister, by the DDG of Civic Services from the Department of Home Affairs, who's also here to help with the response to the questions. Okay, colleagues, we're now ready for your questions. We'll take two from Pretoria, and then respond, and then take two from Cape Town. Pretoria. Boyd?
Thank you. Minister, I heard you on the radio this morning. You were talking on 702, and you said that you felt that the public should get more involved in the Public Bargaining Council at that time of year. If they felt that civil servants weren't doing what they think they should make their viewpoint. Are you calling for help at that time of year from the public to get involved?
Okay, second question. None, maybe Minister, so you should respond.
If you remember, the radio announcer, is that what you call it? Reedy actually asked the question, and she said, Minister, the issue has been raised that increments may have been out of turn, and we don't necessarily see the levels of productivity required. And I said the public should remember that at times of wage negotiations. I didn't call for help in the bargaining council, because the bargaining council is very clear on who sits in the council. In order to comment, because I said, look, this is public funds, and the public is entitled to demand improved productivity to ensure that we see better service delivery, etc. So it was more a comment, because I think we know that when there's negotiations, then you have good guys and bad guys. And people are always trying to see who they think would be the good or the bad guy. And I think all that one was saying is that the public is entitled to hold public servants accountable. And that's precisely why we had this campaign that we launched late last year, Know Your Citizen Rights campaign. And here we also indicate that there is a need, even when doing the performance assessments, of heads of departments and directors general, that we may want to consider citizen satisfaction surveys. Now, that's quite a bold move, because we're actually saying we'll also take into account feedback that comes from the public. So, no, there's no place for an extra negotiator called the public, but it's just in terms of what happens out there.
Just out of curiosity, following those wage negotiations, when wage negotiations are actually approved, do you find that there is improved performance from civil servants?
You know, to a large degree, as I said on radio this morning as well, we can't be anecdotal about these issues. We actually need to do an assessment of performance of the public service. And I would have to look at the issue of what the public finance, what the public management watch says. We are also at the moment looking quite closely at reviewing remuneration of the senior management service. And I've indicated to the team that's done the research that we cannot simply consider a review without taking into account whether we will see improved performance and improved productivity. I don't always think that there's a very direct link between the percentage of a salary increase and performance and productivity. And that's why we're also emphasizing on what we call back to basics, on the need for managers to ensure that they are able to lead and steer departments well and effect the various tools that will very clearly be measured against our departmental work plans, which is based on the strategic our strategic plans to ensure that these are implemented. Right now in government, we're involved in a process of what we call business unusual. And at least in the portfolios that I'm responsible for, they are pushing very hard. And I think we will, and I can talk about increased productivity in places. I want to give you one example. If you look at Palama, in the way in which Palama is moving, we are seeing increased outcomes. So we didn't just have a fanfare to launch the building, the ZK Matthews building, and to actually launch the programs. We've already seen in what has come to me as part of my regular assessment of the work, I've seen improvement there. And I wouldn't necessarily see that as linked to salary increases. What I would say it is as a result of is better stewardship and management within Palama. And that's one example I can give. There are other examples too. But where you have weak management and stewardship, you have problems. And you also have staff objecting against job evaluations, the outcome thereof, the way in which performance evaluations have done, where they feel that it may have been partial, etc. And a lot of that is about how the managers deal with those issues.
Thank you, Minister. Further questions?
Right at the back.
Good morning, Minister. In your report,
can you introduce yourself?
My name is Neo Makiting from SABC Radio News in Hatfield. In your report, Minister, I was sort of taken aback by the absence when you spoke about the performance management or performance assessment, the absence of Batupili, policy or program, you know, regarding the civil servants. Is this a deliberate kind of oversight, or is the police still being the epitome of the government strategy?
You know, absolutely. It's not an absence and it's not an oversight. As a matter of fact, if we were to cover all the areas we deal with, you'd be sitting here for a much longer space of time, much more time, and you may just fall asleep listening to me using public service speak. But on a more serious note, your service delivery improvement plans is a core part of Batupili in order to ensure its implementation. And in this instance, we've referred to that and compliance with it. But we know that Batupili itself as a program is also, shall I call it, the very culture that informs the functioning of the public service. So no, there's not a departure. As a matter of fact, there's a ramping up of it. And I had also in an earlier response spoke about the whole issue of Know Your Citizens' Rights campaign, which is premised on the Batupile principles and so on. So it's squarely there. People-centered, people-first, people's input is all part of it, and that also links into the whole issue of citizen satisfaction surveys and so on.
Thanks, Minister. Cape Town?
Yes, in Cape Town we have two.
Good morning, Minister. Anna Majavu from Soweto. I've got a few questions. The first one is the service delivery improvement plans for courts, prisons, and police stations. Can you just give some examples about what these might include? The second question is the progress report on the policy review process in provincial and local government that was discussed at the recent Cabinet Lekgotla. Can you give more details on this? I mean, does this include the single public service happening soon? And the third question is on the ID smart cards. Just for my newspaper's readers, how will this be implemented practically? Will people have to come back to Home Affairs and apply for new IDs by a certain date, or will Home Affairs do this for us? Will people have to pay for these smart cards? And then the final question is,
can we take your final question later? We'll end up forgetting what questions you've asked. Let's take response to
civil.
Okay. Home Affairs first.
You come and do
and these applications.
Thank you, Minister. The smart card process, how will it be implemented? We have identified the implementing strategy that it will firstly be a phased-in approach, which means it will run parallel with the green barcoded ID, because our international benchmark have indicated that even in countries where they've got about 5 million population, they took plus minus 5 years to implement it. Quite clearly, the country has got huge numbers in terms of about 47 million or so. So it will be a phased-in approach. Will people have to come back to Home Affairs to get the smart card? Clearly, that strategy will be outlined. We'll start first with a pilot process that will be starting in December. And out of that, the clear strategy on how then will we be able to get people to come and apply will then be unfolded. What we need to emphasize is that the issue of encrypting the chip needs a central process, and therefore then there will be a decentralized process once that has been done. So there will be a clear strategy that will be outlined to the public, but we want to start with first the piloting process that will start in December. Will the people pay? Yes, if you look at the cost of the smart card, clearly as we are paying for the ID, those cost implications are being factored into Cabinet requested that we come with a clear business plan, which we will then present to Cabinet. Out of that, the issues of cost and everything will then be outlined. Thanks.
Thank you. I'm going to respond to the question regarding the review on provinces and local government. You asked what did this entail. That is the report to Cabinet. This entails a report on options with regard to provincial government, secondly, options with regard to local government in as far as improving accountability at local government level and the structure of local government, particularly the two-tier system of local government, the local municipalities and district municipalities, and what reforms would be required at that level. Thirdly, we looked at cooperative governance and intergovernmental relations, how the three spheres are able to work together. And the two main conclusions that were drawn were that, firstly, provincial and local government have contributed to the progress that has been made in achieving the objectives of national reconstruction and development over the last 14 years. And this is also going to be reflected in the 15-year review report of the presidency. However, there are institutional challenges within the system that need to be addressed, where there are constraints, especially with regard to improved performance. And these have to do with a capacity that is uneven, have to do with the need to improve accountability as well as local leadership programs. Thank you.
Just on the service delivery improvement plans, what it would involve for all departments would be looking at both your back office and front office operations. So the way in which you manage your finances and your HR in the back office, you would need to review that to ensure that you are managing optimally. And then in the front office, obviously the way in which you manage the process through which citizens access the service. The turnaround times, obviously we have the example from Home Affairs here. That is also part of service delivery improvement, where you re-engineer your processes in order to speed up your turnaround times in providing certain services. It would obviously fundamentally involve setting service standards for the delivery of particular services. So that's really what's entailed in the development of the service delivery improvement plans. And what we want to do going forward, I think as the Minister has mentioned, is to begin to link your service delivery improvement plans in the medium term with your
strategic planning processes. So there's a link between service delivery improvement planning and overall strategic planning going forward. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, DG. Cape Town, any further questions?
Donald Presley, Business Report. A follow-up on the Sowetan question regarding the single public service. Has this project being delayed or put on a back burner now, given that you've run out of political time for your administration and the looming election, which obviously is a political question to the minister? The phasing away of the 16-knot salary structure, I don't quite understand that. Will we have more notches, or how will the system work?
Let me deal with the technical question, Donald. Less notches. And we'll spell that out once the work has been completed, because that's work being done, and it's also going to be negotiated in the Public Sector Coordinating Bargaining Council, and you're well aware that I don't use the media as a channel for negotiation, much as someone tried to suggest that maybe the media can come in as the public. On the second one, Donald, running out of political time, I thought the ANC is winning the next election. Maybe we should bet on that one. But neither here nor there. On the specific matter, you are aware that the draft legislation is before Parliament. You should ask Parliament the question around where the process is right now. Because separation of powers, we cannot dictate to Parliament on how they should deal with this particular aspect. At the level of the executive, we are continuing the work, and the costing has been completed. There will be extensive consultation across government, and that's the administrative arm, on the findings from the costing, and that will take forward. So we'll continue doing the work as is required. Thanks.
Okay, Pretoria. Is it Boyd only who wants to ask questions? Okay, Boyd.
Sorry, just to follow up on this Wesson and Donald's question. Minister, would you feel disappointed, though, if you didn't manage to see the single public service change completed under your term?
No, I'm a cadre of the African National Congress, and we all do the work that's required at a given point in time. I think what we need to ensure is that we satisfy ourselves with the rigor of work being done. And in any event, the single public service was not going to be completed in this political term. We also, as we look at the implementation, have seen the implementation being incremental. Now, I assume you've had discussions with the ANC president, so you know he's going to be in his cabinet next term.
Any further questions?
In Cape Town, a final one.
Okay.
Hi, my name is Lwandile Fumba from SABC Parliament. I'm more interested in the signing of performance agreements. My question is, will there be annual performance plans are not linked to senior managers' performance agreements? And therefore, isn't it an expectation, in fact a requirement, that when the annual performance plan is done, then those performance agreements should also be completed and signed?
See whether I am responding to the point that you are making. But one thing I want to say, if performance assessments have not been done of directors generals, then clearly they are not entitled to increments that are performance links. That's the link, that's first and foremost. I think secondly, you are saying the annual reports surely should be combined with the signed performance agreements and all. We've had the submission of annual reports, which has been a requirement, but we've seen in practice that that has not necessarily resulted in performance agreements signed between heads of department or directors general and the executive authority. And that's why we are looking at also having the support of the Auditor General in his ensuring that compliance on all these human resource issues are considered as they do the performance audits of departments.
There was a final one from Cape Town.
Chair, I've got a final one from It's News 24.
Abigail Isaacs from Beale. I want to ask a question about the delegation powers from executive authorities to HODs. If 10% has complied and 33% has not complied, what has the rest of the percentage done? It's unclear. And which departments or which executive authorities are the ones that have made no or limited delegations to the HODs?
I don't have the details of the ministries and departments involved, so I can't give you that now. It's clearly part of a naming and shaming exercise, and we'll start with doing that in the executive. We've actually identified that at previous Mahutla, and I think that we may have had a breakdown in this one, but that's a matter we will deal with. In terms of the compliance with the delegations, as has been said here, we found that very few executive authorities made extensive delegations. So the 10% is about extensive delegation, while 33% made no or limited delegations. So in essence, we were talking about 43% that had in actual fact 10% that did so extensively, and that's required, 33% that had limited delegations, and then we found that there was also delegations in 72% of departments that did not fully cover the responsibilities. So it means that it was at different levels of delegation. I can't give you a further breakdown of that at this point in time, and I'm very clearly, I will need to go and do, to go and have a closer look at the research done in order to deal with it. But in essence, we are saying that other than the 10%, for 90% of departments, the delegations are unsatisfactory. I think that's what you should take out of that.
I think we're about to wrap up. Is there any last questions? Pretoria none. Cape Town none. Thank you very much, Minister.
Thank you very much. Thanks.
Our next meeting will be on Thursday.
Thank you, Harold.